Hello and welcome to Happier, a podcast that gives you ideas for how to build happier habits into your daily life. This week, we'll talk about why you should avoid collecting excessive amounts of anything and why it's tough when worlds collide. I'm Gretchen Rubin, a writer who studies happiness, good habits, and human nature. I'm in New York City, and with me is my sister, Elizabeth Kraft.
That's me, Elizabeth Kraft, a TV writer and producer living in LA. And Gretchen, I don't think I've said it lately, but I feel very happy that I've got you as my own personal happiness bully. So thank you on an ongoing basis for that.
Well, thank you for allowing me to experiment on you from time to time.
Now, Gretch, a while back, we talked about the fact that you wanted to have a good summer. Yeah. That you wanted your summer to feel different from the rest of the year, and you were not prone to do that. So I said at the time, well, I'm going to check in with you closer to summer and see what you've got cooking for summer. Mm. So that time has come. So, you know, we're past spring break. Everyone's thinking about summer. I know I have enormous anxiety about like what camps and activities to sign Jack up for. I've done nothing, by the way, because I'm frozen. But what have you done to plan your summer?
Well, I've worked on, speaking of like kid summer versus adult summer, I've worked done a lot of work on my kid summers, but I really, and I have, but I have not done enough about my own summer. And you're right to call me on it because I want to be thinking about it now, when summer is coming up, and I don't want to wait until, you know, I'm halfway through the summer to start pondering it. But I mean, I was thinking, what do I want my summer? I really envy people where their summers are very different from their winters, and because it just feels like it's more life, like you have a whole different experience. And since I'm a writer who works for myself, I really do have a lot of flexibility. So I could set up my routine, my daily routine, my situation in a very different way in the summer, and I just never do. I, like you say, I just always have it be exactly like the rest of my year, and then I regret it later because I'm like, I should have done something cool with my summer. But I have to say, I'm kind of stalled out about what it would be. I don't really want to like move to a different place, you know, for a month or two. But maybe it's a different way of structuring my days. Maybe I want to like shake it up differently, or just, I don't know. If anybody has any ideas about how to approach a summer or how to think about changing your routine just so you feel like you have a different life for a while, I would love to hear it because I feel like this is something, I'm glad you reminded me because this is something that I need to think through more.
Yeah. You know what's interesting? When you were doing the happiness project, you had all these distinctive sets of time where you're like, this month I'm, you know, taking a drawing class, and this month I'm doing yoga or whatever it was. I don't think that was one of them. But now you don't have that. So it's, you know, it's like, cause I would, you've kind of tried a bunch of stuff you wanted to try, and cause trying something would be an obvious thing to do during the summer, but I don't feel like you have anything outstanding that you're dying to do.
No, but you know, but you're right though. I did have like the month of, you know, marriage and the month of reading and all that. Maybe I should think of like, well, what, like I kind of like, I could have a month of lunch dates where I just like, cause I've had this whole group of people that I'm like, I would love to see them for lunch. And maybe in the summer it does feel a little bit looser. Maybe I could have like the month of lunch dates where I just reconnect with a bunch of people and really try to have a lunch date every day, because I could do that if I wanted to, you know, or maybe like the month of the library, because I love going to the library and I tend to go, I don't go every single day, but maybe like if I was like, I'm really going to go every single day, that would shape that month. It would really give it a different flavor. I like that. Maybe I was feeling too overwhelmed by the summer. It felt too long to deal with, because you're right, in the happiness project, that worked really well to give it kind of a special focus.
And it's sort of like what's fun for you versus, I think maybe you were feeling like you needed to be too summery, like go sailing or something.
Yes.
Whereas to you, going to the library is a fun summer activity.
No, right. Maybe that's the thing. You're exactly right. Like you have this idea, we should be playing tennis, or, you know, and you're like, oh, but I hate tennis and I can't play tennis or whatever. We should be playing board games. We should be doing 1,000-piece puzzles on the dining room table. And it's like, oh, but I hate doing puzzles, you know. So this is, okay, you've given me much food for thought. Okay, I'm going to ponder what would make the summer fun for me. And how do I pump that up? Okay, I will get back to you. Excellent. Thank you for that reminder. That's really, really helpful as we mm-hmm. as we head into the summer months. Now, I have to say, Alyssa, this is a Try This at Home tip. I think we need a catchier phrase for it. But the idea of the Try This at Home tip is don't keep excessive amounts of stuff, which is awkward, but an important point. You know, when you're getting mass quantities of something building up, stop that.
Yeah, I think there's certain items that everyone feels like you can't have enough of. Like, I know for me, it's like soy sauce packets.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm very like miserly with my soy sauce packets, especially the green ones, the low salt. Mm. And I could have a drawer full of soy sauce packets from, you know, 2010. but it's like it never feels like enough because you never know when you need soy sauce.
Well, on exactly this point, the packets, when my daughter Eliza was in kindergarten, they did this project, like, you know how like a lot of kindergartens, they have these 100-day things where they really celebrate the 100th day of school. It's kind of like a trend in kindergarten.
Yeah, Jack did that.
Yeah. So as part of the 100-day celebration, they had to do some kind of an exhibit of something of 100 somethings. And one child did an exhibit that involved 100 ketchup packets. And I was saying to the girl's mom, I'm like, man, you know, you must have really scrambled around to get 100 ketchup packets, because I figured she was like asking all her friends and everything, give me your ketchup packets. She goes, oh my gosh, no, we have like hardly even scraped the surface. We got like a million ketchup packets back at home. And you're like, at a certain point, you don't need to, but, and this is what I hate about the excessive amounts of things, is they're often things that feel useful or feel like they're too valuable to be thrown away, and yet they're not, it's not worth it to keep it because they take up so much time and kind of mental space to deal with them. So what do? It's very frustrating because you hate to throw away like basically an entire bottle's worth of good ketchup. And yet you're running out of drawer space. And then you're right, they get old. And I mean, who wants a 10-year-old ketchup packet?
What's also funny is just New York City apartments being the size that they are.
Yes.
It's like, you know, you really want to only keep the necessary items.
Well, and I think that's almost a benefit of living in New York City is that people don't pack rat as much because they just simply don't have the space for it. Whereas somebody in the suburbs who's got like, you know, two floors, a finished attic, a basement, and a garage. I mean, they can have a lot of stuff that they're just keeping. Like, I was reading something about, you know, cleaning. It was a woman talking about sort of the ordeal of going through her parents' house where they'd lived for 40 years. And she was saying that the number of, like, plastic, you know, when you buy food and it's in a reusable plastic container, and basically her parents had kept every single reusable plastic container for the last, you know, 25 years. And like, why are you keeping them? But they feel like they could still be useful. So you don't want to throw them away. And yet you can't use them.
It reminds me of Grandma Kraft.
Yeah.
She kept all of her egg cartons and also all of the tops of her aerosol cans. So like the plastic tops. And it's not that she was a big hoarder type, like her house was not filled with stuff or, you know, she didn't acquire a lot. Like it was all, you know, it was just in her garage. She kept certain items, milk jugs, egg cartons, and these plastic tops. Now, I would use them to build craft projects, which was great.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the only reason she kept them, but I don't know. But I know she had a ton of those.
Right. Well, I think maybe this recycling helps with this, because if you feel like you're recycling something, it doesn't feel as wasteful to put it out in recycling because you think, well, it can turn it into something else. Whereas if you're just throwing it away, it feels like it's utterly wasted. I do feel like it's when it's food related, like the ketchup or the soy sauce, it feels worse to waste it. It feels like wasting food feels particularly uncomfortable, I think.
Well, especially when you know it can last for months.
Yes.
So it's not like a piece of fruit that's not going to last. I mean, a soy sauce packet a year from now, I can use that soy sauce packet, you know, maybe not 10 years, but a year. Yeah.
But so I had a brilliant solution to this recently, which I have to like give myself a gold star for, which is, so, you know, when you get a flower arrangement and it's in just a very basic glass vase, like sometimes you get like a super fancy one and it's like in a real vase that somehow, you know, worth keeping. But a lot of times it's just a clear plastic vase that's like a circle or a square or whatever. But it seems too good to throw away or even to recycle. So I just have this shelf where I keep them and they were just mounting up. They were all over the place. And then I realized, We live literally up the street, half a block away from a flower shop. And so we're just giving them back to the flower shop. And they can reuse them again as flower vases.
That's great.
Isn't that amazing? Okay, but the other problem is rubber bands. Because every day when we, because we live in this funny, weird building, all of our newspapers are rubber banded together. So sometimes one tenant will get the rubber bands and sometimes somebody else will get the rubber bands. But I've been like keeping the rubber bands because I'm like, it's useful to have rubber bands. Yeah. But now I'm like, I have 1,000 rubber bands. You know, and then they do really go bad and they snap and all that. So I'm like, at what point can I just throw away the rubber bands instead of keeping them? But they're perfectly good rubber bands.
Well, I guess you think, how many could you possibly need at a time? 10. So it's right. Like you should never keep more than 10.
Oh, maybe. That's a good way of thinking about it. Right. Like, what is the maximum possible?
It's like the flower vases. You're never going to need more than 4. The biggest party you have, doubt you're having, using more than 4 flower vases.
Well, and
I certainly am never using more than 1.
I feel totally overwhelmed by like the need to put flowers into a vase. So it's hard for me to imagine that I would have 2. So I think this is one thing, is to be very wary of things that you get for free, because they can easily mount up if you're so you don't want to go out of your way to get things for free if you don't know that you're going to use them.
Yes, and Gretchen, you'd be proud of me on this front. I was at Nordstrom's the other day, and I saw that Lancome had a deal where if you spent $35, you got a little mini makeup bag with all these free things in it, a little mini eye makeup remover, mini eye cream, all that kind of stuff. And I stopped, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is my chance to get all this free stuff. And then I said, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to keep walking, even though I could easily justify buying, the face cream I need, which would then give me this stuff. I do not need this stuff. I do not want this stuff. And I kept walking.
Yes.
So you were in my ear.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Because it's like you get it home and you're like, of all these things, there's only one thing that I actually use. And then what do I do with all the rest? It's perfectly good.
And we've talked about this. The problem, yes.
Of the free stuff. But so here's the one thing that I feel like I can't get enough of, and we have gigantic amounts of it, and I just welcome it, which is like those light canvas tote bags, which now is like the swag of choice that everybody gives you a free tote bag. I love that because I feel like it's so helpful to have like a tote bag that you can just give to somebody. Like when I was at mom and dad's house, they were like, she's like, here's this tote bag. You can just take it on the plane. I don't need it back because it's just some lightweight, cheap tote bag, but they're so useful. And I feel like if you have enough, then you can just be, if somebody's over at your house and you're like, oh, you want to take this? Oh, I'll just put it in this little tote bag. Or you want to put your umbrellas in a tote bag? Well, just keep it. It's like, I feel like those are really... I have like 30 of those, and I like having a lot of those, and I keep them all that I get because I get rid of them just as fast. And I embrace the cheap tote bag.
Love the cheap tote bag. That reminds me, Gretchen, when I was in New York, I borrowed a bag from you.
Yes.
And the question is that a bag you want back?
No.
It's from one of the girls' camps.
No, okay. No.
I was wondering, I'm like, is this a giveaway kind of bag or is this a keep bag?
So, you can keep that one. You can keep that one.
All right.
And I bet sometime I'll be at your house and I'll need to put it in and you'll say, oh, 10 years ago, you gave me this bag. Now it's back to you. So a giveaway bag. No, it's handy because it's like bags are things that it seems like often walk out the door. So let us know. First of all, do you have a snappier phrase for this? Because that would be good. But you get the point, which is don't keep excessive amounts of these things that tend to accumulate and take up space and mental energy. Let us know what it is that tends to accumulate in your house and how you get rid of it.
When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. LinkedIn has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else. LinkedIn does all that while making the process easy and intuitive.
I know that when I've been hiring, it's really hard to do. It's really hard to find quality candidates. It's really hard to handle the process. Hiring is easy when you have lots of quality candidates, like with LinkedIn Jobs. It's so easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/Gretchen. That's linkedin.com/Gretchen to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. So, Elizabeth, when you were in New York, you hit a happiness stumbling block. What was that?
Well, Gretchen, it was worlds colliding.
Ooh,
yes, yeah. Which can be quite a happiness stumbling block.
Yeah.
You know, you kept saying, oh, I want to do an episode where Henry and I visit you on the set. And I kept saying, yeah. I don't think people are interested in that. That's boring. It's tedious. And you kept saying, no, I think they will be interested. And then I didn't realize until it was sort of approaching, and even when you guys were there, that I was having a lot of anxiety about the worlds colliding aspect of you guys visiting me on set.
Ah, yeah, because it's like, well, was it the actual recording? So it was like two of your jobs were kind of colliding, or was it that like people from one part of your world were meeting people from another part of your world, or both?
I think it was more of the doing two jobs at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, okay, I'm here and I'm supposed to be doing this job, but do I seem like a dilettante because I'm recording my podcast at the same time? But also I value your time and Henry's time, and I didn't want you guys having to like hang around and wait a lot for me because I was doing my job. So I felt like I would need to balance these two things, you know? And then, yes, a lot of people on set, you know, they don't even know I have a podcast. Mm-hmm. So then here I am with my sister and my producer
trailing around
and
after
you, saying like, oh yeah, I have a podcast. You know, it was just awkward.
Right.
It turned out fine. And it was really fun for you to get to meet people like Henry had never met Sarah. Yeah. You know, it was really fun. But at the same time, I was very glad when it was over.
Yeah.
Do you ever have this anxiety of worlds colliding?
Yeah. You know, and I think part of it is also like being like two parts of yourself simultaneously. Like you were being like somebody would ask, like I would ask you a question from in a podcasty way. And then somebody would kind of wander up to you and ask you a question in an executive producer way. And it was, you had to like switch from one part of your brain to another kind of like in a single conversation. And that's really, and I feel like that sometimes when I'm like in my writerly mode and I get an email from school where I have to go from like thinking with one part of my brain, my writerly professional side, to my is Eleanor available for a play date on a Thursday afternoon?
Right.
It's just like, it's kind of it, those worlds colliding. It's taxing because it doesn't feel seamless. There's somehow some kind of like switching from one track to the next track that can feel hard. And also when people are colliding, like I feel like this comes up for a lot of people at a wedding.
Yes. Oh gosh.
Where it's
yeah.
like, you know, high school friends meeting college friends, meeting work friends and his friends and your family and your partner's family.
Yeah. And you have this desire for everyone to mix and get to know each other and all to become best friends. But what inevitably happens at a wedding is that all the high school friends talk to each other, all the college friends talk to each other, all the work friends talk to each other. Nobody's that interested in talking to anybody else. They just want to talk to the people they know and like.
Yeah.
And you have this feeling like, oh my gosh, people didn't even mix, you know, I failed as a bride because my worlds aren't now one big, you know, happy world together. So I do, when I'm at a wedding, try to make an effort to introduce myself at least to a couple people so I can say to the bride later, like, oh, I met your friend from sixth grade. She's so cool.
Oh, I'm so bad.
But I've never is stressful.
I have never done that. I'm so impressed that you do that. I should do that. I do not do that at all. But wait, so Henry, you've got a thought about worlds colliding.
Oh yeah. Tell me if you guys agree with this. I agree with everything you guys said, like the switching parts of your brain, but it's almost also like switching part of your personality. When I have like a high school friend or a college friend, for whatever reason, I'm not exactly the same person to each of them. Like, and it's not like I'm a con artist or I'm a liar, but like, you know, you act a certain way around some friends and a certain way around other friends. And it's almost stressful to be like, well, which side do I show to this group that's now a mixture of the two?
100%
No, it is, because you have your sort of your different selves.
And then you don't want to come across as like, well, I've been lying to you. This is who I really am when I'm with these people. Yeah.
One thing I notice is cursing. I've noticed with people, like sometimes you'll be with somebody who never, like in some certain contexts, never curses. And then in other contexts, they curse a lot. And it's just very, very context specific. And it's not, and I'm like, I don't think that they're being fake. I just think in certain contexts, it just naturally, because you think of cursing as something that sort of becomes habitual. But I don't think it really does, because some people... People really switch it on and off. But on the other hand, I think some people love it when worlds collide. And I think it's good to recognize that people have different attitudes toward it, because some people really thrive on it and love mixing people up and kind of forcing worlds to mix. So I just think it's a good thing to recognize that people have different views about it. For some people, it's delightful and exciting. And for some people, it's really stressful.
Yeah. And I think it's for people who in social situations are just like, oh, everyone's fine. Everyone can take care of themselves. Like my friend Nancy, she just has a personality where she's not neurotic and anxious. So she just doesn't worry about people talking to each other or mixing. She just assumes everybody's an adult and can handle it. And I think for her, worlds colliding would be much more fun than for someone like me who tends to be more neurotic.
Right. Because I guess part of the worlds colliding is it's stressful for you to be like, as Henry was saying, like speaking in these different ways, like the different personas coming out. And then there's the stress of how do the people in these worlds interact with each other? Are they going to?
Yes.
Yeah. So there's sort of both sides of it.
Can I ask you guys kind of like a meta question about this? Do you feel like you are yourselves on this show? And when you hear people from different parts of your life who listen to the show, it makes you anxious that they're hearing a different version of you?
Ooh, that's such an interesting question. I don't, but I've thought about it. How about you, Elizabeth?
Well, definitely for me, because this is more a part of your professional life. Whereas for me, it's much more... tangential, you know?
Yeah, right, yeah.
So definitely for me, having people in my work world listen to this, they're hearing all of this stuff that they would never otherwise hear about my marriage and being a mom and all of this stuff.
Yeah.
So definitely I have a worlds colliding situation happening, but I just have had to say, well, that's, you know, that's the podcast, Liz, like going on over here. But it's a good question, Henry, because it does cause me some sort of like, oh gosh, who's listening to this, you know?
But you know, I almost think it's a good spiritual exercise. I've been thinking about just this thing. It's because I think you just have to, you cannot fake it. Like you and I could not have faked this for a year. Like in the end, you have to be yourself. Yourself always peeps through. And I think that just sort of saying like, I am going to just allow my true self to come through. And I'm just going to accept the fact that people are going to be exposed to this and make of it what they will. I think it's helped me kind of, you know, my big thing is to be Gretchen, my first personal commandment. And I think doing things like this has helped me be Gretchen, because I'm like, I have to be comfortable with the fact that this is who I am and this is what people will see. And this is, that's what the reality is. Knowing that, it's helped me sort of embrace myself in a different way, because I know it's being seen, because it gets broken down. The worlds are colliding. And so there's, I don't know, for me, it's greater self-acceptance.
And for the record, I'm glad you forced me to do the set visit.
Oh, good. Are you in retrospect?
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
It was tons of fun for Henry and me.
Yeah, you were very cool on set list.
You're very cool. Very cool.
Thank you. Okay, Gretch, it is time for a listener question. And last week we asked people to leave us voicemail questions, not just emails. We love getting those voicemails. And I want to remind everyone that the number is 774-277-9336, or easier to remember, 77-HAPPY-336. And we do, in fact, have a voicemail this week from Mariah.
Hi, Gretchen and Liz. I was hoping you could help me with a happier marriage. I am a questioner married to a classic obliger. It's very important to me that the things that I want get done, and it's very important to my husband that the things that I want get done, which means that in our house, it can look like I'm the only person getting my way. How can I get some help teasing what he really wants out of him so that I can help him make his desires come true too? Thank you so much for your great advice. Bye.
Wow, she sounds like a really, really nice person. Don't you think?
I was going to say, talk about a good person to be married yeah. to. Like, Mariah is yes. like, the, you know, she's a home run.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really.
Wife.
Okay. So I have so many thoughts.
yeah. Let's hear them. I'm dying to hear.
Okay. So this is a question that goes right to the four tendencies. So again, if you want to read a little bit about the four tendencies and to take the quiz that will tell you what your tendency is, if you're an upholder, a questioner, or obliger, or rebel, you can go to happiercast.com/quiz. But to jump into the question, so she's a questioner married to an obliger, and her question is showing something that is a very striking pattern related to obligers. Now, obligers often feel like they are being exploited. And the fact is, they are being exploited. Mm. Upholders, questioners, and rebels will all take advantage of the obliger tendency. And Mariah is absolutely, I think, dead on with thinking, how do I make sure that I don't even inadvertently exploit my husband's obliger tendency to make sure that everything I get's done, and like not to acknowledge the fact that he has his own desires that need to be met. And so, because that is something that happens to obligers. So it's a very important thing to keep in mind. And so how do you help an obliger meet their own inner expectations for themselves? That's a hugely important question, whether you're the obliger or, like, as in Mariah's case, her husband's the obliger. So the key element is outer accountability. So whatever it is that obliger wants, there has to be outer accountability put into place. And maybe Mariah is the person who's going to provide outer accountability, or maybe there's other forms of accountability that would have to be built into the system to make sure that he gets the things that he wants for himself as well.
Well, and beyond that, it sounds like he's not even expressing what he wants. So it sounds like maybe she needs some sort of ritual, like, you know, the first day of every month, it's like, well, what am I hoping to accomplish this month? So she even knows, okay, he's trying to jog more or whatever it is. And so she can create those outer accountabilities. I mean, if the person isn't saying what they even want to achieve, right. You don't even know where to begin.
Right. And so such an important point, which is, and this comes up mostly with upholders and obligers, which is that it's very important to articulate inner expectations. It's important for upholders to articulate inner expectations, because once they're articulated, they have equal force. So like I had no problem meeting the outer expectation of going to law school when I didn't know that I wanted to be a writer. But once I articulated that inner expectation, I was able to pursue it, because once it was in my mind, it had equal weight. But for obligers, sometimes, like you say, it's like drowned out. The weight of outer expectations just overpowers even knowing what those inner expectations are. So you're absolutely right. The first step is, what is the inner expectation? So let's just make up an example so we're not talking in abstractions. So let's say that she sat down with her husband and he was like, well, you know what I would really like to do? I really should exercise. You know, my doctor's telling me to exercise and I know I would feel better. And in college, when I was on the tennis team, I got a lot of exercise and I did feel better. And so that's something I really want. Okay, so he's got an inner expectation of exercising more. So the question is, what is the form of outer accountability? And that's where she can really come into being useful. Maybe she's the one who's every day going to be like, hey, honey, did you go to the gym? For a lot of obligers, that's enough. That someone's saying, did you do it? Or she could say something like, maybe you need to sign up for a class or work out with a trainer. And he might say, but we don't need to spend that kind of money on me. And she could say, no. Look, nothing is more important to me than your health. I need you to be there for me. You know, I want you to be healthy. And this is a good place for us to spend our money. Like, I would rather spend it on a trainer now than like heart surgery later. And so let's do it. And so then it's like, okay, this is my outer expectation that I'm putting on you, that I want you to exercise. And then I'm going to think, and then you're going to work out with a trainer. And that's going to be a form of outer expectation. So I'm expecting you to do it. The trainer's expecting you to show up. That's going to be outer accountability. Or there sometimes obligers come up with like funny ways to do it, where it might be something like, she loves to, let's say, she loves to exercise, but he doesn't like to exercise. So you'd work out a deal where she can only exercise on a day that he exercises. So if he's not exercising, then she can't exercise. And so, okay, well, that's a form of accountability. There's a million things that you can do once you realize that the accountability is necessary. So you're right. The first step is to identify what is the inner expectation. And then the second step is, how do we build in the outer accountability, whether it's provided by Mariah? A lot of times people who are not obligers don't like to provide accountability because it can be a lot of work, but there are other systems to put into place. And so,
well, it sounds like she would be willing to do the work because she's very thoughtful.
Yes. And, but it's over and over, obligers will say, like, well, I've asked my husband to say to me, like, you know, did you go to the gym today? And he's like, why should I? Like, and because the questioner's like, well, why should I? And the answer is because an obliger needs accountability. So that's a good reason. So, but I think she's really wise to think about it, because when obligers, eventually obligers can fall into obliger rebellion if they always feel like they're meeting outer expectations and the inner expectations are never getting met. And so it's really, really smart if you're thinking about the long-term happiness of your marital partner to be thinking about how do we make sure that the things that they want get done too.
So I hope Mariah lets us know,
Gretch,
how this goes.
We all know that our life and our health can be improved when we eat nourishing, healthy meals, but it can be hard to maintain. With Sunbasket Meal Kits, it's easy because they take care of the details. Sunbasket offers 18 chef-crafted, dietitian-approved recipes each week with options like Mediterranean, carb-conscious, vegetarian, and keto-friendly. The recipes are quick and easy to follow, and you can enjoy a meal full of organic produce and clean ingredients that's ready in 30 minutes or less.
Try mouthwatering Sunbasket dishes like salmon burgers with lemon dill mayo and seared squash, or steaks with chimichurri and harissa roasted sweet potatoes. My son Jack loves salmon, and he loves the Sunbasket salmon burgers. Go to sunbasket.com/happier today to get $45 off your first order. That's sunbasket.com/happier to get $45 off your first box plus free shipping.
Okay, Gretch, you are up with a happiness demerit. What is your demerit this week?
This is a demerit that I deserve this year, and I deserve for several of the past years. So I live near Central Park, and in the springtime, there are these beautiful magnolia trees that are just covered in blossoms, and there's this whole stand of cherry blossom trees. It's just breathtaking. And every year, I'm like, oh, it's springtime. I'm going to walk in the park and go look at the beautiful blooming trees. And then, like, you know, four out of the last 5 years, I didn't go. And then, like, we had a big frost, and so, like, a lot of these things just sort of died overnight. And so, but I wasn't going. Why didn't I go? I mean, on any day, I could have just said, oh, I'm going to go on a little break from work and just go out, look at them, they're beautiful. And then I see that they're gone, and I feel like, oh my gosh, you know, spring has come and gone again, and I miss the blooming trees.
So that's it? They're just gone?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, that was a short window.
Yeah. But I mean, that's the thing, is also you don't know how long they're going to be. Also, like a big wind, you know, sometimes they're in full beautiful bloom for a long time, and sometimes there's some kind of weather condition that cuts it short.
This reminds me of my demerit for the blood moon that I did not go out and look at.
Yes. Yeah. But the blood moon was a one night thing. You missed it that one night. This is like, I could have gone anytime probably for a week and, you know, gone and done it.
Yeah, maybe you should think of it as next year, like, oh, Barnaby will enjoy seeing this.
Yeah.
He'll do it for Barnaby. If not for you, do it for Barnaby.
That's a very obliger thing. Could do that, or I could just say, like, I know I'll regret it later if I don't do it, so I should do it now because later on I'll feel bad about it. And it's just like with the doing something for Leap Day, the anticipation of knowing that I was teeing myself up for a demerit made me think, like, I really need to rise to this occasion. Maybe next year I'll be like, I don't want to give myself another demerit for the same lame, lazy behavior. This year I'm going to go. So anyway, take us up to a happier place than me missing the flowers and the flowering trees.
Yeah, well, Gretch, my gold star this week goes to Adam, my husband. Now, as we have discussed, I was just in New York for 5 weeks. I only came home twice for 2 weekends, so I really was gone for a long time. And Adam, as a result, was really an only parent during that whole time. I mean, he had to do everything. You know, he had to get Jack up and himself ready every morning, get him to school on time, you know, put him to bed every night, do, you know, all the things that normally we share, he had full responsibility. And I just want to give him a gold star because he did it with such grace. Like, he did not complain about it one time.
Oh, that's nice.
If ever I asked him, like, you know, is it really hard? He would say, no, it's fine. We're getting a lot of Jack Daddy time. Oh, it's great.
That's nice.
Yeah, he, I mean, I think he enjoyed it, although I know it was a lot of stress and work, just because Adam's been working a lot. So he's been having a lot of nights where he'd put Jack to bed and then he'd work for till 3 a.m. or something.
Oh my gosh.
And then he'd get up at, you know, 6:45 to have to get him to school. And as we know, Adam's not a morning person.
Yeah.
So he really took on a lot without complaint. So I really appreciated it because I was working so much that if I had felt at home like he was unhappy or stressed out, yeah, or, you know, feeling taxed, it would have just added to my sort of mental brain drain.
Yeah.
But instead, I felt like, oh, everything's great at home. Jack is great. He and Adam are happy. I mean, of course, thank goodness we had our nanny Cynthia there backing all this up.
Yeah.
But, you know, Adam just... you know, he always does a lot, but usually, yeah, I'm there to do, you know, yeah, roughly half of it. So big gold star to Adam for stepping up, for just being a great husband, supporting me in what I was doing, and also, you know, just being, actually seeing it as a benefit that he got to have extra Jack time.
Yeah. No, that's nice. It's like, it's a double gold star. One, for doing it, and another for like doing it in a way so that you had a good feeling about it instead of feeling a lot of anxiety about it. That's
yeah,
great. Yeah. Oh, what a
and
good
And as
star.
A result, Jack was sleeping with Adam every night. So now he's still in that. So we've got our family bed going for the time being. So that's very cozy.
Oh, gold stars. And that's it for this episode of Happier. Remember to try this at home. Stop amassing excessive amounts of something. Let us know if you tried it and what you were amassing and how it worked for you to stop amassing it.
Thanks to our producer, Henry Malofsky, who also provided insights into worlds colliding. And thanks to Andy Bowers and Laura Mayer from Panoply. We love to hear from listeners. Please contact us. Gretchen's on Twitter at Gretchen Rubin, and I'm at Elizabeth Kraft. Or email us at podcast@gretchenrubin.com.
If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend and subscribe to us in iTunes. And if you'd like to get my monthly newsletter where I have highlights from my blog and from this podcast and a bunch of other stuff, just text me at 66866 and follow the prompts and you'll be signed up.
Until next week, I'm Elizabeth Kraft.
And I'm Gretchen Rubin. Thanks for joining us. Onward and upward.